presentation. Will you lead us the pledge of allegiance?
Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Yes, first then we'll take a roll call. To my right, Commissioner Rice.
Present.
In your third district, second district is Commissioner Salem.
Present.
Fourth district, Commissioner Koo.
Present.
Fifth district, Commissioner Bartlett.
Present.
And I'm with the first district, Commissioner Hahn. Okay, we have a consent item to approve the minutes for the February 26, 2025. Can I get a motion?
A motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I abstain, I wasn't here.
That's correct. Okay, Executive Officer, Mr. Kirk, can you introduce the first item, please?
Yes, sir. The first item in front of you today is the zoning code amendment zoning code amendment CA-25-01, which is amendments to the floodplain overlay district. The applicant is Development Services. The location is all unincorporated areas of all supervisorial districts. This is both the initiation and consideration of recommendations of the proposed zoning code amendment 25-01 to revise section 7-9-42, floodplain overlay district of the county's comprehensive zoning code with updated information to ensure continued consistency with the floodplain management requirements of the National Flood Insurance Program and Community Rating System Program to the Board of Supervisors. We have Ruby Maldonado, who is a senior consultant with the county, presenting on behalf of county staff.
Good afternoon. Just waiting for the presentation.
We can see it.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. We're here today to talk about Zoning Code Amendment CA-25-01 regarding the Floodplain Overlay District regulations. My name is Ruby Maldonado, and I've been working with Joyce Drysdale from Orange County Public Works Flood Programs. And I'll be handing this over to Joyce, and she will be providing the technical information regarding the proposed amendment revisions to the Floodplain District and the reasons why we're going through this process.
Hi, I'm Joyce Streisel with Flood Programs from Orange County Public Works, and I am just going to give a brief background on the zoning code amendment changes. So we're basically doing this update to ensure we're consistent with the regulations for the National Flood Insurance Program, or the NFIP, and the Community Rating System, the CRS program. And meeting these requirements will result in continued discounts on flood insurance premiums for residents in unincorporated Orange County who have flood insurance. The previous zoning code amendments were completed in 2018, and the proposed revisions as I mentioned, are to ensure compliance with NFIP and CRS. And the main changes are increasing the number of definitions to make sure everyone understands the different requirements, updating the requirements for new construction or substantial improvements, and the largest update is adopting a new 1 foot minimum freeboard for structures that are located within the special flood hazard area. I will talk about what that entails on the next slide. So this figure shows the special flood hazard area, SFHA, with the EFE, which is the base flood elevation. That is the surface water elevation that would come about as a result of the 100-year flood. And the freeboard just shows the difference between the lowest, the height of the structure's lowest floor above the base flood elevation. So that's, freeboard is that difference. And so we're proposing a 1 foot freeboard to make sure we're in compliance with the NFIP and the community service, community rating system. And this is just an overview of the community rating system that we've worked on. And it's basically a FEMA program that provides flood insurance premium discounts to communities that go above and beyond the minimum requirements set forth in the NFIP. And communities that participate need to meet certain requirements and standards and undergo an annual recertification as well as a periodic in-person cycle verification visit. And it just so happens that we have our cycle verification visit coming in fall 2025 this year. And currently we are a class 5 rating in the CRS program, and that is related with a 25% flood insurance premium discount for policyholders within unincorporated Orange County. Here are the recommended actions for the commission. This concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Louie.
Thank you. Today we're asking your commission to consider the proposed zoning code amendment language, the revisions to the overlay district regulations, to conduct a public hearing, authorize initiation of the zoning code amendment, and recommend to the Board of Supervisors to adopt the proposed zoning code amendment in your resolution today. Typically, staff will request authorization to initiate a zoning code amendment several months before bringing it to you back again. However, in this case, the proposed amendment is non-controversial, deals with changes that will address new federal regulations, and is time sensitive, which is why we're asking you to do both of those actions at the same meeting this time. That concludes our presentation. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
One second, before I turn to the commissioners. You say it's time sensitive. Is there a deadline that we're supposed to meet? Or it's just that ASAP type of thing? Or?
So it is time sensitive because as part of the CRS regulations, we need to have these amendments already adopted and enforced by the county prior to the cycle verification visit. And the cycle verification visit is happening in the fall, so we need to also have this item go to the board and have it adopted by the board.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Commissioners, any comments before we go to turn to the public? Okay, so I guess we'll open the public hearing for any member of the public that want to speak on this matter. Do we have any?
There are no requests to speak.
Okay, that's easy enough. So can I get a motion from one of the commissioners?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think we all kind of evaluate and understand this as a consistency determination and trying to be consistent with what we've done in the past. and understanding the time regulations, and as such, I'd be happy to make a motion to approve the staff recommended action.
Okay, please do.
I'll second that.
I'd be happy to second that motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we are ready for item number two. Executive officer?
I'm going to recuse myself because I have a consultant to an energy services company that's actually even mentioned in a constituent letter, so thanks.
To be clear to the remaining commissioners, we're not taking action on this today.
All right, and with that, item number two is a study session for general plan amendment, GPA 24-03, and zoning code amendment 24-03, regarding battery energy storage systems and ordinances meant to regulate those. This is would be applicable to all supervisorial districts, and Scarlett Dugan will be presenting on behalf of county staff.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm back. Today I'm here to present on the progress towards drafting a bus facility ordinance and taking feedback from the Planning Commission as we continue on this process. The first update is on actions taken by the county to date. Since the Planning Commission approved the initiation of General Plan Amendment GPA 2403 and Zoning Code Amendment CA 2403 in December of last year, the Board of Supervisors took two actions, one this past January and one this month, to approve an interim urgency ordinance placing a moratorium on the issuance of any permits for bus facilities in the unincorporated areas of Orange County. The interim urgency ordinance, which expires on January 26, 2026, does not apply to residential and non-residential energy storage requirements specified by the California Code of Regulations, Title 24, Part 6, and nothing in the interim urgency ordinance conflicts with the opt-in certification process for best facilities established by and under the authority of the California Energy Commission. The second update is on our research efforts. Staff started conducting research for best facilities ordinance after the October 2024 board action and progressed to initial meetings with stakeholders to gain input from their experience and expertise with the best facilities. The primary feedback we received from these initial meetings include the importance of regulatory consistency with other jurisdictions throughout the state of California to provide a predictable permitting environment for developers of these facilities. The propensity for developers to site best facilities where there is easy interconnection to the energy grid, such as near existing substations, to minimize the need to build additional infrastructure. A request for us to consider limiting or prohibiting best facilities in areas susceptible to wildfires or designated as very high fire hazard severity. A request for us to consider prohibiting best facilities that are designed to be completely enclosed in a building, instead encourage facilities to be mostly outdoors. A request for us to consider requiring a hazard mitigation analysis and other fire code strategies as part of our ordinance. Based on the initial feedback from the external and internal stakeholders and our research, which included reviewing existing best regulations and guidance from nearby jurisdiction as well as jurisdictions throughout the state and the country. We have developed general categories to include in our best facilities ordinance. In addition to safety, the overall intent of the proposed considerations also contemplates the following: avoid overlapping regulations to not conflict with CEC, California Energy Commission, or state mandated energy regulations. An attempt to not over-regulate on best facilities to anticipate more permit processing at the local level and minimize bypassing the county in favor of the CEC process. Provide guidance on aesthetics to minimize visual impacts to the surrounding community. With a more narrow regulatory framework in place, we would now like to solicit feedback from the Planning Commission on the following considerations. Location and siting. Consider requirements for distance of best facilities from sensitive receptors, such as residences, schools, hospitals, businesses, frequented by the public. Currently, AB 303, which is under consideration by the state legislature, proposes just over half a mile, about 0.6 miles distance requirement to sensitive receptors. Keep in mind, this bill is not passed yet. It's just being considered under the legislature. As far as location and siting, consider minimizing or prohibiting best facilities in environmentally sensitive sites such as coastal zone, farmland, hazard space site, earthquake fault zone, flood hazard area, dedicated conservation area. Also consider limiting best facilities to specific zoning districts. Next, facility capacity affected by the ordinance. Should the best facilities ordinance include all best facility sizes except for residential and non-residential energy storage requirements specified by the California Code of Regulations, Title 24, Part 6, or just best facilities that are generally considered large scale or utility scale, sometimes referred to as in front of meter? For the approval required for best facilities through our ordinance, is a use permit to the Planning Commission the most appropriate path for approval for this facility? Continuing on the regulatory consideration is aesthetics, lighting, noise, signage considerations to minimize impact to communities. Consider 6-foot maximum screening walls and fencing that are both aesthetically pleasing and promote safety. Consider landscape requirements focusing more on the exterior of the property to contribute to screening and fire hazard mitigation. Explore any height limitations, such as 6 feet for exposed equipment, 15 feet for enclosed equipment, and a path for permitting over height structures. Consider incorporating references to the current zoning code requirements for lighting, noise, and signage requirements for consistency. Parking considerations. Should there be a separate parking requirement for unoccupied facilities versus facilities with regular employees? Should the parking requirements conform to current zoning code requirements? Next consideration would be OCFA review. Consider requiring a concurrent review with OCFA through a hazard mitigation analysis to allow for proper review of fire hazard mitigation measures associated with the best facility. Next consideration would be requiring a decommissioning plan to promote stewardship of the land. And finally, economic and public benefits. Consider requiring applicants of best facilities to provide sufficient support in demonstrating economic and public benefits to the county and community through compliance with applicable public resources code. So those are all the considerations of our regulatory framework. Following the update of these framework is our third update on communication. As the county works towards approval of a best facilities ordinance, the public can track progress on this journey through the project webpage, which is available through OC Public Works, OC Development Services website. The next steps for this project are outlined on this slide. We anticipate providing the proposed best facilities ordinance to the Planning Commission in June, July of this year to seek recommendation from the Planning Commission for board approval. As you can see, we are projecting to have a board-approved best facilities ordinance before the end of this year to have an effective regulatory framework in place prior to the January 26, 2026 expiration of the interim emergency ordinance. Finally, for today's study session for the General Plan Amendment GPA 2403 and Zoning Code Amendment CA 2403 relating to the County of Orange Best Facilities Ordinance, we ask that the Planning Commission receive the staff report and public testimony and to provide feedback to staff as appropriate. Thank you, Commissioners, for allowing me time to provide you with this update and gain your input as we continue making progress.
Thank you. First, we'll turn to the Commissioner to see if you guys have any comments on this matter. Go ahead, Commissioner Barlett.
Yes. A few questions, if I may, before we get into the public hearing. That first bullet point under location and siting, you have considered prohibiting best facilities within 3,200 feet of a sensitive receptor. Can you explain for us and the people here the definition of the sensitive receptor?
So I gave some example of sensitive receptors. Those are taken directly from, and I'll go back to that. Actually, I did not put it on the slide, but from AB 303, that's the state legislature bill that's being considered right now, they provide a definition for sensitive receptors, and my summary of it from the bill is, let me just grab the definitions. So for sensitive receptors, they define it as AB 303, and this is a summarized list of that. Residences, schools, hospitals, businesses frequented by the public, and there are a couple other additional ones that are similar to these two, but this is a high-level summary of that. But if you want a specific definition, I can certainly follow up with the definition provided by AB 303.
So is it correct that the County of Orange is considering consistent definition with what's being proposed right now and AB 303, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, one other question here. Under economic and public benefits, the first bullet point, you indicated that now consider whether the use for best facilities shall not be granted unless findings that can be made that it's a positive economic benefit to the county consistent with Public Resources Code 25545.9. I don't happen to know what that code is, so maybe you could explain that.
Our ordinance and other zoning requirements that we are looking at, they have a complementary regulation, right, and other ordinances that we want to make sure that we are meeting. And so for Public Resources Code, this is something that sits alongside this ordinance. And we would do it by reference to this Public Resource Code. But at the end of the day, this is something that was contemplated because we have seen this through another jurisdictional ordinance that references the same code to make sure that we are making findings that are consistent with other existing codes that are out there that we need to be compliant with. And I think Nicole's going to answer some additional information on that.
So that code section states that for purposes of this section, which is the Public Resource Code, but we would use a similar definition of economic benefits. And economic benefits may include employment growth, housing development, infrastructure and environmental improvements, assistance to public schools and education, assistance to public safety agencies and departments, property taxes and sales and use tax revenues.
That's helpful. I think that what threw me off was perhaps the overall net positive economic benefit, which would imply that there would be analysis of revenues and expenses. So it's just that I think what you guys are saying is that just the finding of a positive
economic benefit. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anybody else? Go ahead.
Actually, my question was exactly the same on that, and that was my concern was that a private corporation, like a large Amazon facility or something, might say, we need this, and I was concerned that it might open up for somebody to say that's not public benefit. And so if the corporation says it's for our private economic benefit, might that fall on, Madam Counsel, under that, one of those, the first couple of things that you met?
Well, I think in terms of employment growth, I mean, we would be there, right? But this is also says included as economic benefits may include, but it's not limited to. So I think part of our regulatory process would be to sort of refine that. Remember, what we're presenting to you today are suggestions. So I think that if you have something that you're looking for, I think where you're headed towards this is that it could be very subjective about whether this is an economic benefit. And so yes, maybe we need to define that further. And if you have ideas about how we could do that, that would be helpful for us. Now or later, doesn't
that? If I may add, there is also the notion of benefit to infrastructure, and that's primarily what these facilities are looking at doing is upgrading and providing a backup or storage capacity for our energy grid, which is considered infrastructure, which would create more of all time of day use of renewable generation. So currently, we see our generation occur with renewables occurring most likely during the daytime. And so that gives us an opportunity to charge batteries. And as you transition into the evening, when the renewable sources such as solar are no longer an option, wind would still be an option, that those battery charging occurring during the day would then come online and reduce reduce dependency on on-demand energy generation such as gas or coal plants. So that would create a more balanced grid capacity than seeing that spike in the daytime of solar and using it throughout the day. So that would be an infrastructure benefit that they could communicate, thereby being consistent with this public resources code.
I see. So if the private company was kind of taking on some of their own burden, that they could argue that it's taking relieving pressure from the more public infrastructure, et cetera. And then I don't want to overthink this, but just because we're at the planning stage, if there's a list not to include, do we know that, we're just guessing that a company could show any one of those or
right.
And guess it's on?
It would be a decision. It would be kind of a discretionary decision.
But things like that, how much do they have to show?
Well, and that would be a discretionary decision. So if you want to eliminate some of that discretion, then the question is whether or not that's part of the regulation even. And also, I was going to point out your Amazon facility, there might be some exemptions for that under, we might not be allowed to permit them under Title 24. So if they have to have battery energy storage or they have to have solar or these other things that are under Title 24, they would be exempt from our ordinances and have to comply with state law in the first place. So we wouldn't be talking about those types of facilities necessarily.
Thank you very much. Oh, and the other thing that I want to mention, Mr. Chairman, I hope I'm not usurping your, I just want to acknowledge that we received this a very comprehensive letter from a person named Teresa Ford, and just for the record, we did review this letter, and she has concerns about safety and setbacks. She doesn't think the 3,200 feet may be enough, and she has concerns. Apparently, there was some sort of fire called the Moss Landing Fourth Fire. And I don't know anything about that. I'll admit that I don't know anything about that. So, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to let Ms. Ford know that we received her letter and appreciate her input. Thank you.
County Council, is that within the time frame where we can admit it for records?
This is just, again, this is a public meeting, but we're not making any decisions today. So everything that we get is considered.
Is considered, okay.
You know, this is just, we're having kind of a study session about what we do with this ordinance. We don't have anything written.
Okay.
Everything that you're seeing is a suggestion, so yes, per letter is considered.
Okay. Commissioner Seiyama, you have anything to add before I make my couple of comments?
I have like a question that's still evolving, so I'm just gonna say it out loud. In terms of like design standards, I know we're still very much like the preliminary phase of just planning this out, but just pop, like planting the seed of like what would that look like for these types of facilities? Because I see like there's, you know, we're talking about parking, but like there's no like minimum or like maximum size for these types of facilities that I'm seeing yet, as well as like, since these facilities can be varying sizes, what type of, are these all gonna fall under the same type of requirements, or is it gonna depend based on size and scale?
So that's part of our, when we begin to define it, we'll be looking at what size facilities. We're largely looking at what are called system size facilities. So these are things over 50 megawatts, megawatt storage capacity, large scale systems. And we're not meant to regulate more on-site residential or private company needs, as Nicole just discussed the Title 24 requirements, which would create some of these facilities as exempt. But these are almost standalone large facilities or co-located facilities transmission air facilities. As it pertains to aesthetic regulations, the kind of concept we're looking at would probably be use of berming of land masses surrounding it. So you would create, you'd have your wall, but then use berming in front of those walls to create some reduction of visible impact, and then have plantings of both mid and tall growth heights to provide screening as well to that. So you would create almost like a park edge setting to these facilities so that you just don't have a large scale industrial looking facility in a non-industrial zoned area.
Okay, thank you. So two things that come to mind. Since these best facilities are so new, safety is always my concern. I think we, as a county, should investigate into that. First of all, I believe you mentioned I call it separation of buffer zone being 0.6 of a mile. I would want to see if we can consult with OCFA and see, hey, should there be an incident, whatever that is, fires, chemical byproduct maybe generate from those fire, is that separation zone be, you know, far enough to give up OCFA or fire department time to deal with those incidents? And then the other issue that I have with it is you mentioned decommissioning the facility. Well, what kind of byproduct would be generated from this facility? Whatever it is, I'm not the expert on this, but I do deal with environmental issue on my practice. We would want to know from these proposed facilities, hey, at the end of the day, when they do want to decommission these facilities, what would we be looking at? What are the byproducts? Environmentally impacted or not, right? And then same thing, consult with OCFA or whoever. So we would be better informed on what kind of danger that we may be exposing to the adjacent public. Right? So I would like for staff to get us more information on those two issues. I know with that in mind, the rest of the commission, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I have some thoughts I might want to add, but I'd like to hear from the public first. That's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
And I would just note that any of these facilities, when they go through OCFA and through the fire planning process, they have a hazard mitigation plan. So we know that included in that would be some of the discussion that you're talking about, and it may be specific to the facility. In conversations with the OCFA, I mean, they are aware of these potential byproducts, but there has been some testing after incidents, and that testing has not revealed widespread byproducts, environmental byproducts that would be hazardous. at any hazardous level. So we were recently told.
And just to add, OCFA's been consulted previously. We continue to consult with them as we develop the ordinance itself. We've been in contact with the state, and their guidelines is what they're looking at adopting at a state level through the GoBiz organization. And what we're really trying to do as it pertains more so to the decommissioning plan is trying to mirror somewhat of a reclamation plan, as you would see with surface mining, where what is the site going to look like after the use is ceased? So not allowing uses just to abandon equipment or material, but that there is a actual permitting and planning process that stipulates, let's just say the technology is lithium-ion batteries. Where are those lithium-ion batteries going after? Is there a site that they can be disposed of safely? How is the site going to be restored back either to a useful or an unused site or a future use? Things of that nature, so that when we get into a site-specific analysis, we know what does the site look like today, what is the site going to look like after permitting and the construction process, and what is the site going to look like after the use ends. And then working through probably the regional water quality boards to ensure that there's no potential for water quality issues, going through the Department of Toxic Substances to see about discharge or elimination of these equipments on site, where does that and how does that need to be appropriately treated so that we don't run into kind of brownfield sites or sites that have future remediation that would burden another use or a property owner in the future.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned ETFC, and I'm sure, you know, they would have some concerns should there be any kind of seepage, you know, to the ground, and the water board may be involved if it gets into the groundwater system. But before we, you know, I know we're not voting today, but whenever that day is, I would like to see if a member from OCFA would come and at least attest to the fact that, hey, we know about this, and should there be an incident, we are ready and capable of doing it. And if that buffer zone to be 0.6 or whatever it is, yeah, that gives us enough distance and time, you know. So I think if there's enough concern from the public, I would like to hear from OCFA on that, if possible.
Mr. Chairman, a comment related to your comment is that, you know, during this hazard mitigation study that we're talking about to determine what the risks will be at various stages, existing, operating, in the future after it's done, you know, let's also just acknowledge if there is any tail on the liability side, and that if there is, you know, consider, you know, try to ascertain what that tail might be, and consider either a bond or a letter of credit or something security that would ensure that property was properly, I guess, abandoned when the time comes.
Of course, and that is, like I said, mirroring SMARA and those regulations is a requirement. So you have a reclamation plan. That reclamation plan has a dollar amount meant to comprehensively account for the cost of it. And then there is a requirement to bond for, I think it's 0.25% or 50% of the total value of remediation of the site. So we'll look at doing something to that extent and kind of making sure that if the operator was just to cease operation in the middle of the night, there was some financial resource available to remediate the site independently.
Okay. Anything else?
Commissioner Harris? Chairman, I know it was mentioned that it's already been considered that these facilities would have to be some kind of certain distance from the wildfire areas, correct? Because I see an inherent conflict in that the things that we may want to do to protect the public aesthetically, you were describing landscaping and things like that. I think we learned from other experience, including the recent fires in LA County, that some of that landscaping can become in the wrong condition can become a fire hazard. So good luck to everybody in the OCFA for giving an input as to where aesthetic considerations might cause issues for safety. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, with that in mind, we'll open it to the members of the public. Anybody? Do we have anybody?
I do not have any requests to speak, but this is now the time and place for public comments. So if anyone would like to speak, you're more than welcome to come and then fill out a speaker slip after commenting.
Nobody, huh? Okay. So with that in mind, do we need to make a motion or anything like that? I don't think so.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of other comments. I wanted to hear from the public first, but since we don't have the public here to, or that wants to speak today, a couple of things, observations, is that I've been involved in a couple of these facilities. Two of them have been involved in next to large-scale substations. And I've seen a couple of these facilities actually placed inside the substation by the in both cases Southern California Edison, and so in a couple of industrial projects, the industrial developer is also considering battery storage next to the building that would interconnect into the substation and be able to generate electricity back to the grid when it's needed most. And I think in general, that seems like a pretty good thing in trying to stabilize the grid, in, especially in times of peak demand. And so I see that as ultimately as a favorable outcome, if you will, if we can get our hands around or our heads around the regulations. In some of the cities that I've been working with, it's pretty straight and forward, where it's just allowed pursuant to a conditional use permit in an industrial zone. And so that's very straightforward. I think what this board is asking for is maybe for a more customized approach. And I agree with that, that looking at this holistically is probably a very wise move on their part and our part. Also, I just want to communicate that in the city of Menifee, there is a large-scale master plan that actually has a battery storage facility associated with the residential development, and it serves essentially as a microgrid. And so the community as a whole can actually get energy from the system should there be an issue of emergency or downtime or peak matter. So I view that as a positive as well. And so trying to make allowances for these types of facilities to coexist with various types of land uses makes sense to me. Like, I would make a suggestion to the staff that one size is not gonna fit all, and that more of a customized approach to each individual site, location, characteristics, et cetera, would be something that would be important to me. And I made a little note here also to, on the economic and public benefits, I think that we have to be a little bit cognizant of how we define benefit, because hearing Mr. Kirk, what you were saying is was good, in that there could be an infrastructure benefit. It may not be an economic benefit, but it could be an overall benefit. And so not necessarily tying this to an economic benefit to the county might make some sense as well. So, but obviously, if there's a proposal that comes through the county, we're going to want to hear, and we're going to want it to be substantiated. What are the benefits of this project that is coming through? And I think if we get too far into the weeds on net positive economic benefits, then it's going to get a little bit murky, because there's a lot that goes into that. But overall, I think the regulations, the looking at customized regulations for this type of facility are good. And with the viewpoint, I guess, or the optics that, hey, overall, I think this is a good thing. We're trying to, you know, stabilize the grid. We're This is a new source of energy for us. It's kind of like solar when it first came on. There are some risks. We're acknowledging what those risks are. There needs to be proper separation. And so just a few comments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And I understand that. And I agree to the fact that these facilities, just like a solar facility, got to be near the grid, right? To avoid gridlock and whatever the case may be. But unlike solar, I believe, based on my understanding, I'm no expert on these best facilities, there's more potential for fire when it comes to battery storage than, let's say, solar. Again, I see somebody shaking their head there, but that's why I'm qualified. I'm no expert. But that's what, at least to some of the constituents that I talk to, they're very concerned about that. Now, the lack of knowledge becomes an issue. So if the lack of knowledge does exist out there, we have to do a better job of presenting, providing the facts to the public before, right, we finalize this this item. But I agree with you, right? We got to weigh the benefits and the risks and then make the decision accordingly.
So as a general statement for most projects, I like to say good science makes good projects, right? Where we create objective standards and criteria that then science can tell us that these are good projects. And we see that a lot in CEQA with various analysis and getting to that place of you're never going to be able to answer 100% of all questions, you know, as they come, but you're responsive enough to the questions that you can largely provide a very technical answer or objective answer saying, here's how things work and here's the quantifiable means in which this is a safer facility. And a lot of that is maybe not having land use decisions and entitlements acted upon without that hazardous mitigation plan up front. Knowing up front what are the potential concerns, conditioning projects through the permitting process to follow fire code and building codes applicable at the time will present a good kind of framework for how these can be considered. And you create, again, a quantifiable and objective standards that you can then provide a checklist to the applicant saying, here's what we're looking for in terms of information, and here's the story you're going to have to tell on your own behalf so that when we do get to the public hearings of these items, it's not just assertive dialogue to comments. It's, well, we did research that, and here is the fire suppression systems that would enable fire response to occur in an adequate time. And the Orange County Fire Authority, while they may not approve of these applications, they find them to meet fire code requirements or other code requirements. And I think that's the way you get to a place where you create as much as you can specialty details for the various sizes of facilities and specialty requirements for these facilities, so it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but you can get them into certain boxes. And a lot of the language and information we're providing today is what we've seen either through AB 303, which is an attempt to regulate these facilities, or through existing communities, so that we're not just starting from scratch, we are taking from somewhere, and then hearing now from the commission what may work and what a focus interest to see added to it will help us develop a full ordinance in the future.
I just want to make sure that the county, right, do our best due diligence before we make a decision on it. And I think in the briefing I have with you, Mr. Kirk, that I asked that staff can research and see, I know this is just county jurisdiction, but if there are you know, cities within the county that have these regulations or standards already, I want to compare those. If we get those data to see what the suggested regulation that we're trying to put together here, to see how we fare with those. That would be helpful for us.
And that's exactly what we are going through. There is also an effort through the state to adopt a model ordinance and information that is aligning with our process, and we're coordinated with what the state is trying to push out from a state level of model ordinances, and then, like I said, looking at what exists today to create something, if not the same, but slightly better and more tailored to the needs of the unincorporated areas of the county.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing, I like that, the only thing I would add to that is maybe not limiting it to the county, and let's look at where these battery storage facilities have been permitted, and let's look at the ordinances where what they say about that and how they're regulated, and you know, open it up to a broader area.
Sure, sure.
And to that point, that's where our discussions with industry partners comes in, because they can convey where they process these facilities, and then we can go back through that public record and find how those facilities were regulated and considered during their public hearings and the ordinances in place.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner? So I guess if we don't have to make a motion on that, we are done with item number two, I believe.
Correct.
With that in mind, we'll turn over to Executive Officer for updates.
Oh, thank you, sir. Not too much of an update. This was a big item that we've been working through. We've talked about the housing element adoption. We've shifted now into development of the programs that are required as part of implementation of the housing element, identifying by milestone year when these need to occur, and we're starting work on that already. We will be having a planning public hearing coming up, I believe, at either the next meeting or the second meeting in April, related to a residential development in North Tustin.
Thank you. And then County Council, any updates?
Yes, after the last meeting, the Ranch Hills item, was continued. So we had a hearing scheduled for April 2nd, but that hearing's been continued to April 30th. So it'll be a little bit longer before we have a result from the Superior Court. That's all I have.
Okay. Commissioners, any comments?
Chairman Hahn, no comment today.
Okay, that's unusual. Anybody else? Commissioner Isaiah, you have anything?
Yeah? Santa Cruz, I'm looking out for beautiful days.
Okay.
Very nice. That's good.
Okay, I'll ask again, but I don't think there's anybody, members of the public. Any public comments? No, so we are adjourned for this afternoon. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.